And when they were able to institutionalize that within the Black community, or to have it accepted within the Black community without analysis of what that meant, that was just another split in the communities. I remember in South Africa when the ANC was fighting for their liberation against the apartheid system, they decided to copy the Americans, and they went, that is the apartheid system, Verwoerd and names like that, went to the Indians and said, we're going to have different laws for brown people as opposed to the extremely oppressive laws to Black people. And so when the Indians went to the ANC and says, what do you think about that? The ANC had the right answer and said, if you go for that, you're the enemy too. We will fight you. And so the Indians and the brown people said, no, we're not going to go for that. But in America, it was a success, and it still is real in Louisiana. Well, it's real within our community. Light-skinned people, I don't know if you ever noticed it, but if you notice, light-skinned people seem to be together. I say, how can that be in a society where there's a mix? You go to work and you're mixed with all kinds of people. And white people are mixing with Black people to a degree. But within the Black community, you find most light-skinned people marry light-skinned people. We see the Obamas. They seem to be the epitome of a success within the Black community. They didn't do anything for the Black community, but then many people within the Black community aspire to be that. That is, colonialism has a structure to it. We oppose the false policies of integration. We said there's no such thing. People who want to be together will be together. We don't have to be afraid of Trump. We say Biden and Trump are the same people. As Glenn Ford put it, the Democrats are the more effective oppressors. We all know that Trump didn't create racism. He just amplified it, took advantage of what was already there. We don't have to jump and support Biden. We have to say, support our political positions, and then we support you. Other than that, I have no interest in voting for Biden. It's Trump or Biden. It matters not.
And also to mention, what's happening is an excellent program that y'all participate in. We'll have that link up with the page for the show so people know what great radio work that y'all are doing as well when it comes to public affairs around all these things. So we'll have you back soon. And folks, thanks so much for listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios at KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our guests and Prison Pipeline Collective member Karen James for production.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website, kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Governance and Policy Committee meets quarterly on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
Tune in to KBOO on Wednesday, October 5th for Dead Moon Night,
a four-hour extravaganza celebrating
the 2017 event when 1,100 rockers showed up outside Portland City Hall
to commemorate the legendary band Dead Moon in an official city proclamation of October 5th as Dead Moon Night.
Again, that's Dead Moon Night, Wednesday, October 5th, from 8 p.m. till midnight.
Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Check this out, this your man Meth right here, man. Wu Gambino still mobbing, Killer Bees still swarming.
Yeah, this is the Jizza from the almighty Wu-Tang. If I'm not swinging a sword to crush your neck piece or keeping these sucker MCs in check with their lyrics, I'm listening to Hard Knock Radio. That's right, Hard Knock Radio.
Hey, yo, this is Ice Cube coming straight from a hard knock life on Hard Knock Radio. Do what we do, baby. Yeah, yeah.
Now, Davey D hanging out with you. Sitting in front of me is a legend. There would be no hip hop if it wasn't for this guy. There wouldn't be a whole lot of us who get down and dirty with the funk. We're talking about the godfather of funk, the father of funk, the one and only George Clinton. How you doing, brother?
I've been D-flea, D-ticked. I got my rabies shot, and I'm ready to bury the bone.
I like that. You know, this is a sharp outfit. Oh. This is a sharp outfit. We came thinking that, you know, we had to get the whole get up, and now you flipped the script and came with the suit and tie.
I try to keep doing that. I try to keep flipping the script, reinventing the shit, you know what I'm saying? We started out like this.
I remember that.
It ain't no thing to make a detour back into the past and make it fresh all over again.
You know, one of the things that we've noticed is that a lot of people have been digging into crates. On the hip-hop side, people, of course, always went to the early P-Funk and Parliament and all that. But then people have been going back to the old stuff, you know, when you was, like, doing the doo-wop and singing and all that. You know, how do you feel about that? And why do you think your music has spanned, like, 40 years and people are still just discovering new stuff?
We got that doo-doo. We got that poop. You know what I'm saying? We got that. No, man, you know, we have a lot of history over the years. We came through rock and roll era when it first got started, you know, with Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis and all of that, Bo Diddley. we were there for all of that. We came right on through the doo-wop days of the Heartbeats and the Cadillacs, then right into Motown.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's a lot of education if you was paying attention. And with me, after seeing Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers do Why Do Fools Fall in Love and reach where they reached in such a short period of time, I was on a mission. Still on a mission. And so I have a collection of musics that, you know, combine all the eras. You know, it's got to be the doo-doo.
Well, we love the doo-doo. I'm not going to lie. The doo-doo is good. You know, stinky funk, yeah, okay. You know.
That's what I'm talking about. Hold your nose type music.
Right. Before, let me tell people who are younger, when you make the gas face or the thizz face, that this face and that look comes from
ooh-wee.
That's the original look right there.
That's getting that. That's putting your foot up in it. You know what I'm saying? That's doing it till it stank. You know what I'm saying? And really, it's getting off. You know, you up, be up for the downstroke. If you're down, get up for the downstroke.
We definitely hear you on that. You know, right now, you are still, people are still checking for you. You haven't lost a lick. A lot of people outside are, you know, like enthusiastic. What do you think has made you be able to stay relevant, you know, and still in sync? Because I know you just did something with Shock G. You know, you're doing stuff with Snoop Dogg. You always seem to stay in.
Well, anytime anybody is out here, we all out here for the same thing. So we can swap endurance for current vibe. You know, when I hear parents say that ain't no music, or I hear old musicians say that ain't music, that's the music I rush to. I don't care if it's hip hop, it ain't no different than bop bop a doo bop and the bop bamboo. That's the way they sounded then. That's the way we sounded to our kid. So when I hear grown folks or older musicians saying they don't like it, that's the music I'm going to.
So what are you going for now? A particular sound?
It's the hip hop. I mean, it's going to always be what's going on and with our sound and our spin on it. You know, because it's all the same thing, but it's just they have a different spin on it, but it's still something that's went through before. So right now, when I hear Lil Wayne them and Eminem and Rihanna, all of them, when I hear them, you know, what they doing, and okay, I got that. Right. But even the hip-hop, you know, the craziest, rudest hip-hop, if it's catching on, I'm going to have to keep my ears to it because they're communicating in another time and space. It ain't the same as ours.
The question that I've always wanted to ask is just looking at the pantheon of legendary musicians that are around. There's yourself, there's Sly Stone, and James Brown. That seems to be the holy trilogy for our generation. But when you look at people like the Princes and Rick James, what separates your funk, for example, from Prince's funk?
Not too much. I mean, Prince is like one of us too. I mean, we were here before him, or James Brown here before us. I mean, funk has always been around, but we've been the practitioner of it out loud, you know, from Atomic Dog to Tear the Roof Off to Test, you know what I'm saying? Music for My Mother. We professed it, and I intended for it to be its own thing, because see, we had rock and roll, it got changed all around. Urban rock, new rock, soft rock, rock, and to the point we couldn't even be part of rock and roll, you know. So we said, "Well, we're gonna keep funk, and you got to deal with us if you're coming through this funk."
One of the things you've always had this, always connected us to things beyond the earthly domain that we stand on, you know, the mothership connection. But this seems to be, you don't see as many artists do that anymore, but for us as Black folks, that seems to be something deeply spiritual. And could you talk about that connection?
Well, I mean, whether we believe it or not, we have to look at it. This ain't the first place this happened at. And I think somebody put us here, something put us here, just like all religions believe. Something like that put us here, and it's, we're putting it someplace else. We're doing the same, seeding the planets all over the place. So the music is directly in rhythm with that stuff. Right. You know, that the beat, the groove, when you hear say Psycho Alpha, Disco Beta, Biowaka Dulu, that's my interpretation. There's got to be some kind of way something can move through the molecules, right, of things without getting messed up. Like going through water and not getting wet. There's something that can do that, you know. And funk is that rhythm. Funk is the DNA for hip-hop, techno, all other music that's around. You get some funk in there. And everybody got some funk somewhere.
I am Sir Nose, the Lord of Funk. I can't swim. I never could swim. I never will swim. I'll put me down. Let go my leg. I told you I could be a shark. I told you I can't swim. Oh no. Put me down. I hate water. Oh. Will you shut up?
Ricky Vincent, who wrote the book History of Funk, a good friend of yours. You know, when I was younger,
Uru Maggot,
yeah. He used to tell me, he said, you know, hip hop is funk. And I always thought it was soul. And then what he told me, something interesting, I want to get your take on it. He said, funk is something where everybody can be a part of, right? Soul is something where it's very exclusive. Just a small group of people can get in there. What's your take on it? And the fact that, you know, some people are now saying that, he always said, hip-hop is funk because it allows everybody to be a part.
Well, that's what it is, like the funkiest way you can make music, to take another record and put them together. That's funky. You know what I'm saying? So it's the basic of, look at Wu-Tang. Everybody had a whole multitude, just like P-Funk. All of them are stars, given a chance to put all their different stuff out. Right. That's funky attitude, because most of them want to back sing on the back of a band and some side men. But when all the people in the neighborhood or that know you can jump up on the stage at some point in the show, right, the people feel like they're part of the band. And that's what P-Funk is. The people is part of the band. They look like it when we go there. If we don't watch it, all of them will be on stage at any given moment.
But you see, you got the outfit on, so I don't know if we're all going to look alike today. Man, you outshining us today.
Well, we always try to we try to keep it confusing because ain't no sense in thinking you know us.
Well, you know, that brings me to another point. Chuck D, Public Enemy, says something to me one time, very interesting. He said, most records, when you listen to them today, you can only listen to them for a limited amount of time, and you don't discover anything new. And he talked about yours and James Brown in particular. He said, you listen to their music, and you discover something new every time. He said, some of it is because there's friction, and it's competition among everybody, and there's a lot of tension, and so the music always takes on new meaning every time you listen to it. But I wanted to ask, you know, because he also said sometimes these musicians, people like yourself, put messages in there that ain't supposed to be discovered until later on. So I wanted to ask you your thought.
What if I put something in there and it's a secret, I ain't supposed to be telling it.
So you're not going to tell us the deeper meaning. I'm trying to make you open up the code.
No, well, I probably couldn't remember the code as to when we did things, because we have done things, put things, said things, and, you know, that under certain conditions you would hear. But I wouldn't even know how to think about it. We did it so much in the 60s and 70s. When we was totally out of our mind, I wouldn't even remember what frame of mind or where I put the code.
Oh, man, George ain't going to let us in on it. Well, let me ask you about a couple of the landmark songs that we've always liked. Knee Deep, what was the meaning behind that?
Wow, that's really weird, because Knee Deep was a song I used to hum when I used to go fishing. And it was just rehearsal, you know, it was melodic rehearsal. But at the same time, I was trying to put part of it in 3/4 time, like round and round the floor we did, and I love to get away with that freak. Go back to that, and that's the reason I didn't think I could record it, because nobody would be dancing a waltz in the middle of something funky.
Listen up, beat, yeah. Boy, was it neat, yeah. Not just knee deep, she was totally deep when she did the freak with me.
Never listen up, beat, yeah. Boy, was it neat, yeah.
The girl's a freak, the girl never misses a beat, yeah, yeah.
It didn't twerk, no.
It wasn't funky no more.
So Junie Morrison, who just got with us from the Ohio Players, when they did Funky Worm, he just got with us. He said, yeah, man, it could be arranged. And he had me sing it, you know. You did Freak, never miss an upbeat. You did Freak, not just needy, she was totally needy. And he had me sing it down. He came back with the track. He said, sing it just the way you always sing it. When I started singing it, everything that you had there fitted.
Right, right.
And from then on, it was just a matter of stacking voices. It's like 70 voices on that record.
Okay, that's what they also say. You're the master doing the stacking.
There's so many stacks of different people on different days that was at the studio. You come in.
Wait, so some people would come in the other days and stack again?
That wasn't part of the continuities out the window. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's so big when, not just needy, she was totally needy. Because you got different days of the week when different people sing the same parts.
Wow.
and we just combined them, and it just got ever so much of P-Funk personality sound. We want the funk. Right. Sound like some can sing, some can't sing.
Right, right.
But it's the sound of the audience. It's the sound of, that's why that song still is around. You can't get away from that song.
Well, that's interesting. I remember Blackalicious, that's here in the Bay Area. They were talking about, yeah, they said that they learned a lot. They was talking about your stacking technique.
Yeah, I worked with them a couple of times, Blackalicious, yeah. Yeah, so, and yeah, we learned that from Phil Spector.
I was going to ask you, was it Phil that he learned from you or you learned from him?
Now, Phil Spector was the master on that when it was four tracks. Mm. He's the stack that is do, 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 you remember that was so whatever, they, two white boys?
Right.
Yeah, they told that song. All these are the Rondettes.
Right, right.
Runny, Babatoon. Like five sets of drums.
Wow, so that's the trick. Chocolate City, I've always loved that. When I came up, that was a song we were all proud of. It seemed like a major statement being said, even though it was obvious about Washington, D.C. But, I mean, when you listen to it, I mean, everybody wanted to be Chocolate City. Talk about that.
It was, and Chocolate City was a cool version of what James Brown was doing. Funky as hell. We just came back and made it kind of jazzy,
right.
Almost like a radio station, and some cool James Brown, you know, Bernie Worrell, the master. Bootsy would come up with the rhythm. Bernie's the king of putting classical colorings around it,
right.
And jazz or classical. And then I just talked doo-doo. And it was like, of the day, it was same Black and I'm Proud. But it was, this time it was a little, it's the Chocolate City and it's Vanilla Suburbs.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it started stretching out the whole concept. And the music still is stretched out because nobody still don't play that much like jazz or stuff on a synthesizer. Mm-hmm. Bernie can play the thing. It's not just the sound effect. He can seriously play classical music. And then, of course, you had that Bootsy with his impeccable rhythms and his brother, Gary Scheider, and all the different people in the band,
right,
that add different things. Or, you know, Glenn Goins, when we were singing Swing Down Sweet Chariot.
Right, right.
That's like some of the highest you can get in that mood.
Oh, what's happening, CC? They still call it the White House, but that's a temporary condition, too. Can you dig it, CC? To each his reach, and if I don't cop, it ain't mine to have. But I'll be reaching for you, because I love you, CC. Right on. There's a lot of chocolate cities around. We've got Newark, we've got Gary. Somebody told me we got L.A. And we're working on Atlanta. But you're the capital. Get down. Moving in on ya. Can't you feel my breath? All up around your neck. Hey, CC. They say you jive and game and can't be changed. But on the positive side, you're my piece of the rock and I love you, CC. Can you dig it? Hey, we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule, but we did get you, CC. Yeah. Gaining on ya. Moving in around ya. God bless CC and his vanilla suburbs. Blood. Yeah. What's happening, Black? Brother Black, blood even.
You know, out of all the people you work with, and I mean, you work with a lot from the Bootsies to the Bernie Worrells and, you know, what have you. Is there anybody that you wish you could have done something with that you just didn't? I mean, if you had your choice right now, if you could bring them in the studio, who would you get down with?
Oh, like I said, I ain't stopped. So I don't feel like I missed. I just haven't gotten to them yet. But I'm close to working with Rakim.
Rakim? You never did nothing with him, huh?
No. I mean, it samples, but he's bad. Eminem is bad. Knew him since he was 14 years old.
Watched, right, because of Detroit, right.
Yeah. Watched him before he ever got a record out be good as his. So my thing, I was trying to get him and Rakim, Eminem and Rakim and Sly and myself.
Wow, what kind of song do you think it would be?
Well, we'd do the hook and the tracks, Sly, and then let them do their poetic damage. And then we'd give it to somebody to do them remixes and, you know what I'm saying? Wow. So they have the right combination of all of it.
Man, Rakim, Eminem, I mean, that would just be classic there, man.
Then you get Sly Stone and P-Funk tracks.
Right. Did you ever do anything with Michael Jackson? Did you all ever cross paths?
Yeah, we crossed paths, but we didn't do it directly. They did one of our songs called I Betcha.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But we got nominated to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame same time. Okay. You know, I was around Motown when they first got there. You know, so we never got a chance to get right in the studio on something together.
Right. Motown didn't want to touch you, or you didn't want to be with them?
I was with Motown twice. You know, but if you wasn't from Detroit, it was hard to get past, you know, getting a song on somebody every now and then.
Right. You know, I know that recently you've been doing a project, and you want to talk a little bit about that, you know, some of the stuff that you're doing currently?
Well, right now we're on the copyright issue. We're trying to change laws on the U.S. Copyright Office, because there's ways people can steal your stuff and you can't do anything about it just by going online, changing your ownership, transfer your music to themselves. That can be done, and it's been done to us to such a severe degree that you're going to start hearing a lot about lawsuits. They think they heard lawsuits before, but now it's coming up because we've gotten actually into the Congress with some of it. You know, we got people that listen at us and check into it, and we got about 3 or 4 trials coming up.
You know, talk a little bit about that, because that has been a problematic, you know, legacy for Black musicians in particular. We have so many people who've bought their heart and soul and their guts and everything, and these are songs that, for me, I think they go beyond just you as the musician.
Yes.
These are songs that define us as a people.
We just put the mothership in the Smithsonian Institute. So that the music means something.
Right.
It's not only Funkadelic, but it's all the people that sampled Funkadelic.
Right.
You know, Humpty Hump. That's a huge record. It's a Funkadelic song in the beginning, but it's a huge record for him. And the same thing happened to him that's happening to us. People have stolen the copyrights to his stuff when somebody else use it.
Right.
People are getting paid for it. He don't.
Right.
My son don't, who wrote the song it was sampled from, Let's Play House.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And
so that money's not going back to you all.
No,
this is,
it's not going to us at all. We're having the entire band, money is going basically to the same person who got mine. Okay, right now we're trying to put a class action lawsuit together for everybody in the band, not only us, but Sly Stone.
Right.
We're all right together, so we work together, we've done songs together. So
it inspires us, you know, we take a riff and we add something up. And that seems to be a natural way in which music is created.
That's the way they create music nowadays, that you can't get around it. That's the way they make music. So there ain't no thing saying that it ain't good or bad. That's just a new thing to do. Right. And if you funky, to me it's a funky way to make music. You know, put two things together. We've done it before. Right. We used to listen to radio like that. When one station was fading out, another station was fading in, and you had to hear two songs at the same time. We used to it. And but they make records like that. So I'm with that. You know, just you have to make some contracts and respect.
We got to add to the gumbo.
Yeah, you got to respect it. Because what you're doing is artsy-fartsy, too. Right. You know, you can. It's, your thing is real, right. Whether people want to believe it now or not. Once you get it perfected, it's going to be right straight to jazz or classical hip-hop. Right. You're going to, ain't no doubt about it, you're going to find some excellent musicians and artists, you know, like Bobby McFerrin, and be able to verbalize stuff, you know what I'm saying? You're going to find that it's going to elevate all the way to that. So do it right. Don't be gangster and trying to hide the sample.
You'll find it. You're the master. You're the master of the stack.
Well, somebody going to find it. They got musicologists now and machines that will find it. You got people that ain't got nothing to do with it finding it and suing you.
Yeah.
So I've been sued. For somebody said they sued for me, then I have sued anybody.
Wow.
I've never sued any hip hopper. But I know that somebody took their money for the sample.
Wow. Wow. You know, when I hear this, this is disheartening. What can we do, people that are listening, people that are watching, what can we do to help make sure that somebody like you gets your just due and that music that you created that comes from our collective experience doesn't go in the hands of some corporation somewhere or some individual who ain't even part of where we from?
Go to our site, Funk Proboski, and show you how you can.
You know, I can't spell how do you say that again?
Proboski. Funk Proboski.
Spell that for me, Jones.
Okay. Proboscis Proboski. And you'll get that, and it has all these different cases and ways laws has to be changed from professors and everything, and all our lawsuits that we're in that answer these questions. Any artist that's around now need to really educate himself on copyright. I mean, it's something to trade. If you trade, ain't no shame in getting paid to trade it, but it do revert back to your family at some point. So when you do those things, you don't have to believe that you done sold it forever.
Right.
And see, all that nobody knows. It's never been a reality. We just now testing, it's been a law, but we just now testing that law. And the record industry is busy trying to change it because a lot of stuff gets reverted back to the authors in 2013, One Nation being one of them. The record companies are fighting like hell all of a sudden to not have to honor that because they never did have to honor before. They could always skate around it and the publicity wouldn't be there. But now with the internet and all the talk, it's hard to hide anything.
Wow. So they're trying to change the laws as we go along.
They're really trying to change it. They've been disregarding it, but now they're actually trying to change it. They're fighting like hell to get people to change it. Because songs are like mortgages. You know how they had bundles of mortgages and getting loans from banks? They do the same thing with copyrights of regular R&B hip-hop song hits. Get one song, 2,000 other songs.
Right. Now, is there a difference between, you know, actually writing the song and, you know, coming up with the lyrics and melody versus what you actually put on vinyl? Are we talking about stuff that you actually recorded? That should be reverted back to you at some point as well, right?
The master, yeah, that the record that you have, the CD that you have, right, that will revert back to you at a certain point.
But they're trying to change that.
Yeah, that's a copyright. There's a copyright issue for the record and for the song, publishing-wise. The record itself belongs to the artist after a certain amount of time. Mm. And songs like One Nation, I done in 78.
Right.
2013 is the year it reverts back to me. But they're fighting like hell not to let that, or Knee Deep, revert back to me. But, you know, have actually went ahead of time into the copyright office and already changed the ownership. Oh. Have already done this.
So they changed the ownership so the clock starts all over again.
Yeah. Change it. And the copyright place tell you, ain't nothing we can do. You have to take it to court.
Wow.
Even after court, they're saying we can't go back and make them pay from behind, but starting from now, you can get paid.
Man, this is something that we all...
We've introduced some laws to Congress that when somebody comes to change your copyright, they have to give you a call or email or something telling you somebody's trying to change it.
Is there any particular congressman or legislature that you work with? I know, like, Orrin Hatch was pretty big on the thing. And
well, John Conyers.
Okay. John was doing a lot of stuff with the jazz musicians.
He still is. He still is. And for all of the hip-hop stuff, Sheila Jackson Lee.
Okay.
And Bobby Rush.
Okay.
All of them, you know about it, been talking with us. We've got instances for John Conyers on some jazz musicians where their stuff was taken. Because when you go up there, you can just look up anybody's history.
Wow.
But as soon as you find out about it and you see all this, what they've been doing, they say, well, we can't do nothing about it.
So Tribe Called Quest wasn't kidding when they said 4,080 record labels are shady. Shady, shady, man.
Oh, it's shady. They're out of business for that.
You know, let's end on a high note, you know, and I'm glad that you shared with me. I'm mad. Now you got me all mad. I'm ready to go kick some doors.
No, don't do that.
Don't go Rambo.
You can't kill them but once. That ain't enough. Okay. But we're going to do something about it. You know what I'm saying? We putting all together, all this music on this Indiegogo outside. Right. Getting our studio together with all these old tapes and refurbishing these tapes, putting them out as stems and new media,
right.
All of that. So
you're going to remaster?
We're going to remaster and put them on new formats.
Okay, because I like the old doo-wop stuff. Yeah. A lot of us found them doo-wop records.
I got all of that stuff. I can remix and remaster the originals or whatever.
Let me ask you this, man. You know, before you do that, why don't you just give, you know, us, you know, me and my friends a couple of copies, just exclusives. You know, yeah, you know, let them figure it out themselves. You know,
believe me, we can do that with some of the fans that give to the Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. We give them mixes that we be on right then and there that won't stay this way for another 20 minutes. But whatever they was happening to call them on in a certain pocket, we just make a CD of it and send it to them. So the fans are getting all kind of silly surprises.
Man, that's the lick right there. You know, Brother George, we get ready to let you get ready to go on the stage. What's the last, you know, some parting words that you want to give to people? Let me start with this question. If I'm a young guy, I'm coming up and I want to build on the legacy of the funk, and I want to add to it and, you know, and take it to newer heights, what are some three essential things I got to do?
Well, I'm going to give you one long one. Okay. Say to yourself, I promise the funk, promise to keep its promise, you'll keep the funk.
Wait, repeat that again, just one more time.
I promise to funk, promise to keep its promise, you'll keep the funk. Say it one more time. I promise to funk, promise to keep its promise, you'll keep the funk.
There you go, man. That's something to end on. George Clinton, man. Remember, there's no hip-hop without this brother. There's no funk without him. It's a whole lot of music that just would not exist without him. I there wouldn't be no Beatles, man, as far as I'm concerned.
No. I can't go that far.
I mean, no Glenn Campbell, man. There'd be no Glenn Campbell if it wasn't for George Clinton.
They was funking. They was around. They was funking a little at the same time. You know what I'm saying? They were Beatles. Matter of fact, I was biting off of their butt. I went too far. I was biting it back, but they did some good biting themselves. But I bit so much off of them, they'd have a tetanus shot.
Brother George, thank you so much, man. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Yo, this is George Dr. Funkenstein Clinton saying you're listening to Hard Knock Radio.
So I can't get around it.
So low, you can't so get under it. Get
so high, you can't get over
so
it.
So high, can't get over it.
This is a chance. This is a chance.
Here's a chance to dance our way out of our constriction. Gonna be freaking up and down the hang up alleyway. With the groove I only got, we shall all be moved. Ready or not, here we come. Getting down on the one which we believe in.
Can I get it on my good foot? Good God. God. Oh, come on, get down. One time.
We're on the move. They can stop us now.
Ha, 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 yeah.
Hey, don't tell me now.
Three, two, Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. We are here at the big Day of Presence rally here at the Convention Center in New Orleans. We came across a legend, somebody who has a lot of insight. We want to get some of his wisdom. We're talking about the one and only Mr. Dick Gregory. How are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm fantastic. Thank you, and God bless you and the family. And just it's just a lovely day to be here.
It's lovely, but it's also kind of bittersweet, I would imagine. I mean, 2 years after the worst disaster this country has faced, what do you think about the recovery efforts? What do you think about the spirit of the people?
Surprise, as long as black folks and poor folks been in America, it's like you believe he was once good and then he got bad. He never been no good when it comes to poor folks and black folks. I mean, we live in a country that when you talk about, if we could all work and make this a humane society, but in America, when you think of humane society, you think of animals. We keep getting signals and we're the one. They keep looking the other way. A bridge collapsed in Minnesota, and in 2 days, they personally hand-carried $200 million to them. So what's this game about?
It's interesting that you point that out. I often play excerpts from a speech that you gave off of one of your albums where you talk about that. You talk about that we have to think, and you also talk about how this country likes to shove democracy down people's throats. It's kind of interesting. I think you did the speech maybe in like in the 70s, and here we are 30, 40 years later, things haven't changed. So how come we haven't learned these lessons that you seem to have been talking about for so long?
Well, there's something about a slave mentality that you hate to admit that somebody else controls your faith and destiny when you're under the illusion that you live in a free democratic society. If you go back and look at Daddy Bush, he was president for 4 years. Then Clinton came in for eight. It's 12 years. And Baby Bush come in for eight. That's 20 years. And if Hillary win, it's two families and dominated this country for damn near 30 years. And Americans, black and white, is too stupid to understand what a dynasty. But if it happened in the Philippines, we could see it and understand it.
And we would also send troops over there, too.
Yeah, and I tell you something else. Look. If my trifling cousin came here from St. Louis and went in the Hilton Hotel and killed 34 white folks, he gonna get the electric chair. If Prince Charles has come here, Prince Charles' son came here and killed 50 white folks, he's not gonna get the electric chair. So they ain't stupid, we are. We are for something that don't even pertain to nobody but us, poor folks. So you can keep your blinders on if you want to. That's not their fault, that's our fault.
So what do you think we should do? Other than taking the blinders off, what are some practical steps? 2 years after Katrina, what would you tell poor folks, black folks, to do from this moment on?
Well, every time I see somebody with a platform to talk about it, they never mention racism. You know, they dance all around that, you know. And if I got cancer and I'm limping because I got cancer, if you just talk about I'm limping, and let somebody determine why I'm limping. You see, first you have to understand what you can do. You can organize. You can embarrass this country around the world. And that's what we're not doing. You can go to the United Nations. You can do a whole lots of things. But we're not doing that because we want to do something else that we're not qualified to do. We can go every time they shoot up a rocket. We can have groups there and embarrass them all over the world. And so consequently, we got to come up with a strategy. We know that if something happened on Mars today, and we got a message that a town had blown up, and the Martians is saying, yeah, we here, we couldn't get there fast enough, man. And you know, it's interesting when the mayor referred to this town as Chocolate City, and it was an outcry. Well, I turned on TV, and when I heard him say Chocolate City, I thought he was talking about Hershey, Pennsylvania. But think about this for a minute. We had people outraged because he called it Chocolate City, but New Orleans all over the world is known as Sin City, and that don't seem to bother nobody. Chocolate City do.
That's real interesting, astute observation on it. I didn't think of it that way. You know, let me ask you, there are a lot of people that are on the ground running. There are a lot of people here that have been self-sufficient, but they weren't at the table today. I didn't see Common Ground and all those people here at the Day of Presence. How do we make that connection, or how do we uplift those folks that are actually doing the work, putting their shoulder to the grind, and not waiting for George Bush to give them a bunch of money to do it?
Well, you got to do both of them together. I mean, if George Bush, that's not his money, that's our money. So I shouldn't have to wait for my money. But when you go to the mentality that like somebody else is in control of when I get fed and you in my kitchen with my food, then that's my fault. All you got to do is just change the attitude. You see, two things I'll leave you with. Remember a butterfly, very beautiful, very fragile, but it can fly all the way across the Atlantic Ocean and all the way across the Pacific Ocean, but the bald eagle can't make that trip, that little butterfly. And secondly, if you remember the dinosaurs, billions of years, roamed this planet, taller than mountains. We still are when we talk about them. But we fail to realize the cockroach was here with them. Dinosaur gone, cockroach still here. Why? Because the cockroach never got hung up in its evilness. It never tried to use devious means. It never had no hidden agenda. It just kept moving with that universal spirit. And so if you want to show your child or grandchild a dinosaur today, you have to take it to a museum. Want to show them a cockroach, just put some stagnant water in the house and they'll come to you. And so what we look like is that we've always been that cockroach, and we've survived and the dinosaur didn't, because there's enough of us that know what the agenda is. There's enough of us that don't get bitter, that don't get full of, when you think of the civil rights movement, we have created an atmosphere where a white woman can be a cop, where a white woman can fly a plane. Remember, before our civil rights legislation, the only thing a white woman could do on the airplane was be a stewardess, and she had to look like something off the center page of Playboy magazine. And because of the civil rights legislation that didn't say for Negroes only, anytime you get on a plane today and see an old, fat, ugly white stewardess, we got her that job. Not her brother, not the Marines, and not the President of the United States. We still had this power.
And we forget that. I appreciate the wisdom. We've been talking with Dick Gregory. Any last comments before we bounce out of here?
No, you know, somebody asked me, say, you've been mad 48 years. What's the secret? It's not love. It's can you be lovable? And when you're lovable, I'm safe with you and you're safe with me. And so when we see the fact of love, that's what the civil rights movement was about. Remember, the strongest two forces in the history of America always been the black woman and the black church. And look what we were able to do with that combination. We have survived stuff that no human being in the history of the planet have ever had to survive. And yet we're here. We had laws that said if a white person was caught teaching you how to read or write, that white person could be killed. that laws that say black folks, man and woman can't get married. And then they want to come up and tell me about family values. I am family values. But they keep tricking us. Black on black crime. Well, if we go to China tonight, who you think killing Chinese in China? We go to Italy tomorrow, who you think killing Italians in Italy? And if 98% of white folks that was murdered in America last year was murdered by white folks, if they ain't talking about white on white crime, how we get tricked to talk about black on black crime? You kill where you live. You know? And so what we got to do is just take a deep breath. It's like the word nigger. I mean, I can't believe that we black folk could be that ignorant that we let a white boy. Look, if you go around the world and say, what did Jesse Jackson say to make Jews mad? They won't say the H word. He said, honey. And if you got up and made a speech and said, Jew bastard, they won't say you said JB. So why, when it comes my turn, it got to be colder and I'm stupid enough to fall for it? That's what this game is about. The word is nigger. We didn't invent it. And now when it gets to the point, you see, this happened with DeMarc Furman, O.J. Simpson. As white folks would really believe that O.J. was guilty, and the only way the jury was turned because Mark Furman in the use of the word again, so they changed it to the N-word. Not me. Not you. If you call my mama a hoe and I say, don't you call her the H, well, she's still out. You still calling her a hoe. So why we got to sit around when it comes my turn? Can you imagine Jews being so stupid one day to let some good-doing Germans that feel sorry for what Hitler and the Nazis did change the word swastika to the S word and concentration camp to the C word?
That's real talk right there. Let me just ask you, since you brought that up, a lot of times when we talk about, you know, the N word, you know, they often point to your book. And some people say, well, this was proof that, you know, that he was using it, so therefore what's wrong with the use of it? Can you put that into context? Since
I don't have, look, you see, I'm tired of people coming to get our best to deal with their worst. I'm on a plane today. I'm flying to Europe. There's a white couple and a baby. The baby's crying, screaming and hollering. The white woman slapped the baby, keep hitting it. And an hour later, we over the Atlantic, all of them sleep. Then the baby wake up and start screaming and hollering again. I'm going to hit that baby because they did it. I'll be arrested when I get off. So how come we don't understand that? How come we don't understand when it comes my turn, they want to twist stuff around and we suck enough to eat man? Let me tell you one thing about the word nigga. Not N-word with me. If you're going to talk about it, frame it. 99% of black women don't use the word. White folks don't even know that because we stupid enough to start talking about it and lead the whole world to believe that's all we say. I've been married 48 years. I ain't never heard my wife say, again is a man thing. And if you bring in the right people to check it instead of a bunch of emotions, it might be a sex thing. Okay? So that's why the word is, again, I don't like the word N-word. N-word is the 14th letter in the alphabet. And when little children hear the N-word in Russia, they don't know what it really means. And we let them get by with it.
There you go. Mr. Dick Gregory, I appreciate it, my brother.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, man. Break it.
See you, Bob. Party time. Step on it. Home. Girl. told me.